I want you to think about the most annoying sound in a workshop.
Hmm?
It's not the high-pitched whine of a router, and it's not, you know, lumber hitting the floor.
Hmm.
It's that low rhythmic vibration. You turn on a drill press, an old fan, and the whole machine just starts to do its little dance. Thump, thump, thump.
It's the heartbeat of neglected machinery.
Exactly. It rattles your teeth. It makes the coffee in your mug ripple like that scene in Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And usually my brain goes straight to the expensive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Is the motor bearing shot? Is the shaft bent?
Which is a natural reaction. We always blame the complex parts first.
But today we're looking at source material that suggests the culprit is actually the simplest, most boring component in the whole drivetrain.
The V-belt.
The V-belt. Specifically, we're doing a deep dive into a piece of tech that claims to solve that thump by completely redesigning what a belt even is. We're talking about the Power Twist Link Belt.
And it's a fascinating case study in mechanical engineering because it really challenges a design that's been around since, what, 1917?
100 years, yeah.
The continuous rubber loop is the standard. It's cheap, it works, it's everywhere. So when someone comes along and says, actually, let's chop that loop into hundreds of little pieces, it raises some eyebrows.
It definitely raised mine. The source material for this comes from Renewable Energy Consultants, LLC, specifically a product overview from a Bob Rice.
Okay.
And I have to be honest, when I first saw the photos of this Power Twist belt, I thought it was a gimmick. It looks like a toy, like a giant red plastic chain you'd hang a plant with.
It certainly doesn't look like serious industrial equipment at first glance.
Right. So the mission today is to figure out if this is an actual upgrade or just a novelty. We're going to look at the physics of why rubber belts fail, the specific memory problems that cause all that vibration.
And whether a modular link design can actually outperform a solid loop.
And the trade-offs, too, because usually when you go from a solid material to a segmented one, you're introducing weak points.
That's the conventional wisdom, for sure.
Exactly. So let's start with the status quo, the standard black rubber V-belt. Why is it so prone to this thumping issue? The source material mentions something called taking a set.
Right. And this is a material property issue. Most standard belts are a mix of natural and synthetic rubbers. And rubber, you know, it's a polymer, but it's not perfectly stable. It reacts to heat. And more importantly, it reacts to stasis.
Stasis as in just sitting still.
Exactly. Yeah. Imagine you have a table saw in your garage. You use it on a Saturday, then you shut it off.
Okay.
That belt is wrapped tightly around a small metal pulley. It sits there under tension for 6 days, maybe 6 months over the winter. The rubber molecules slowly realign to deal with that stress. They sort of cure in that shape.
So it literally remembers the shape of the pulley.
It develops a memory. So instead of a perfect circle, your belt is now an oval with two very distinct flat spots or kinks in it.
The source material calls it becoming misshapen.
Right, but in engineering terms, it's a density variation. The belt is physically stiffer in those corners.
And that's the thump.
That is the thump. Every single time that stiff, kinky section of the belt hits the pulley, it resists bending. It strikes the metal instead of flowing over it.
Wow.
And that impact creates a shockwave that travels down the belt, into the motor mount, and eventually into the whole chassis of the machine.
Which, if I'm trying to do any kind of precision work, is a total nightmare.
It's disastrous for precision.
Yeah.
If you're turning a bowl on a lathe or cutting a nice joint on a table saw, that vibration transfers right to the workpiece.
You get chatter marks.
You get chatter marks, poor surface finish. And beyond the cut, it's just terrible for the machine itself. That rhythmic thumping is hammering your bearings to death.
So this brings us to the Power Twist. The source material makes a pretty aggressive claim here. It says this belt cannot develop a permanent flat spot.
Which is a bold claim, but it all comes down to the geometry.
Okay, describe this thing for us. If it's not a loop, what is it?
It's a composite structure. So instead of a continuous band, you have individual links. They're made of a high-performance polyurethane elastomer.
Some kind of high-tech plastic.
Exactly. Reinforced with polyester fabric. And each link has a tab and a slot. You connect them together like a chain to form the belt.
Okay, so it's like Legos for drivetrains. But how does that solve the memory issue? If I leave this polyurethane chain on a pulley for 6 months, won't the plastic just get stuck in that shape too?
Not really. And for two main reasons. First, the material itself. Polyurethane has a much higher resistance to what's called creep or deformation than standard rubber. It doesn't oxidize and harden in the same way.
Okay.
But the second, and maybe more important reason, is the mechanical articulation.
The hinges.
The hinges, exactly. Even if an individual link gets a little bit stiff, the connection point between the links, the hinge, is still free. The second the motor turns, the belt articulates. There's no continuous internal tension fighting against the movement.
It doesn't have a spine to get bent out of shape.
For all practical purposes, no. It's structurally incapable of holding that set.
So that's why the source says it reduces vibration.
That's a huge part of it. But there's another layer to the vibration dampening that isn't just about the shape. It's the segmented nature of the belt itself.
What do you mean by that?
Well, think about a solid rubber band. If you pluck it, it vibrates, right?
Sure.
A solid belt is a great conductor of harmonic energy. If your motor has a slight hum, the belt transmits it perfectly to the saw blade.
Like a telephone wire.
Precisely. But the power twist is segmented.
Yeah.
Every link is a break in the material. It's much, much harder for a harmonic wave to travel through hundreds of tiny mechanical joints than through a solid medium. The belt itself acts as a damper. It absorbs the energy instead of transmitting it.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like the difference between hitting a solid steel bar and hitting a chain. The chain just goes clunk and the energy dies.
Exactly. And that's why people often report that their machines run quieter. It's not just the lack of the thump. It's the interruption of all those other harmonic frequencies.
Okay, I'm with you on the vibration, but I want to push back on the material a bit. The source says this is a high-performance polyurethane, but isn't plastic. Weaker than rubber.
Mm-hmm.
Rubber grips, plastic slips. Doesn't this thing just slide all over the pulley?
That's a really common misconception. We hear polyurethane and we think of like a hard skateboard wheel. But this elastomer is formulated to be really grippy. And in fact, because the belt is made of links, under load, the sides of the links actually bulge out slightly.
They expand.
They deflect, yeah. So when the belt creates tension, the links wedge themselves even tighter into the V groove of the pulley. The harder the load, the tighter the grip. So slippage is rarely an issue unless your tension is just completely wrong.
And what about durability? The source material drops a massive number here. It says, past performance shows probability of lasting up to 15 times longer than conventional V-belts. 15 times. That sounds, let's call it optimistic.
It is a high ceiling, sure. But you have to consider the failure modes of rubber. Rubber is, you know, organic adjacent. It rots. It reacts with ozone in the air.
Right.
If you have a compressor in a shop where there are fumes or oil or grease, standard rubber starts to degrade immediately. It gets spongy, it swells, or it dries out and cracks.
Dry rot is the term the source uses.
Right. Polyurethane is practically inert to those things. Mm-hmm. The source lists resistance to water, steam, oils, grease, common industrial solvents. You could probably dip this belt in engine oil and it just wouldn't care.
Okay.
That's where the longevity comes from. It's not necessarily that it's mechanically stronger in a tug of war, but that it survives the environment that kills rubber.
So if I'm running a clean machine in a climate-controlled lab, maybe the difference isn't 15x. But if I'm in a hot, greasy garage...
That's where that gap widens. Exactly.
Let's talk about the one-box concept, because this is the big logistical argument the source makes.
And this is huge for anyone who manages a facility or even just a serious hobby shop.
The source describes the old way as basically a wall of confusion. You have to stock every single length of belt you could ever imagine needing.
It's the Goldilocks problem. You need a 42-inch belt. You have a 41 and a 43.
And neither will work.
Neither works.
Yeah.
The 41 is too tight, it'll burn out your bearings. The 43 is too loose, it'll just slip. So you have to stop work, drive to the supply house, and just hope they have a 42 in stock.
And the power twist solution is just buy a box of the links.
You go the width, not the length.
Yeah.
V-belts come in standard profiles, 3L, A, B, C, and so on. If you have a box of A profile links, you have every single A belt length in existence. You just count out the links you need and snap them together.
It effectively makes inventory obsolete.
It turns inventory into a utility. It's like having a spool of wire instead of a bunch of pre-cut lengths. The source says the belt will not deteriorate in the box, so you buy 25 feet of it, use 4 feet today, and the rest can sit on a shelf for 5 years, perfectly fine.
Okay, but this is where I get skeptical. I've never met a universal solution that wasn't a total pain to actually use. Let's talk installation. The source says no tools required. Is that actually true? Snapping heavy-duty plastic links together sounds like a recipe for very sore thumbs.
It is toolless,
yeah.
But there is a technique to it. It's not just a simple snap. You have to twist the tabs.
Ah, hence the name, power twist.
There you go. You usually turn the tab 90 degrees to lock it through the slot of the next link.
And does direction matter?
Absolutely. This is where people mess up. The links have a specific orientation. Mm-hmm. You usually want the tabs facing inside the loop, and there's a direction of travel. If you install it backward, the links can actually unsnap themselves as they run over the pulley.
So there's a bit of a learning curve.
A small one, yeah. But compare that to the alternative. Think about the captive drive problem this horse mentions.
Oh, the nightmare scenario.
Exactly. You know, picture a big lathe or a complex conveyor system.
Yeah.
Sometimes the belt path is completely enclosed. To change a solid rubber loop, you have to disassemble the entire machine.
I've been there.
You're pulling shafts, removing bearings, recalibrating everything just to slide a $10 loop of rubber over an axle.
It turns a 10-minute job into a weekend project.
And with the link belt, you just drape the chain over the pulleys and connect the two ends. You thread it through like a needle. The source explicitly says no disassembly of equipment.
Wow.
For industrial maintenance, that uptime savings alone pays for the belt, regardless of how long it lasts.
That brings me to the cost. The source doesn't list a price, but generally these link belts are quite a bit more expensive per foot than a standard rubber belt.
They are. You're definitely paying a premium.
So is it worth it?
I mean, if you look at it purely as cost of goods, it's pricey. But if you calculate the total cost of ownership, the math shifts. If that link belt saves you 4 hours of a mechanic's labor tearing down a machine, it paid for itself instantly.
Right.
If it saves your bearings from being hammered to death by vibration, it paid for itself. If it saves you from having to drive to the store in the middle of a project, that has value.
It's the classic time is money equation.
Right. And there's the adjustable tension aspect, too. The source mentions you can fine-tune tension just by adding or removing a link.
Which implies you don't have to move the motor.
Sometimes you can't. On some older equipment, the motor mount is seized up, or it just doesn't have enough travel. With a rubber belt, if you can't move the motor, you can't tension the belt. It's impossible.
Mm-hmm.
With this, you just remove a link. If it's too tight, okay, you add one back. You can find that sweet spot without having to wrestle with rusted motor bolts.
The source outlines a specific installation procedure. Remove the old belt, assemble the new one to approximate length, install it, and then, this seems key, fine-tune tension.
And then run briefly and recheck. That part's important. Because these are mechanical links, they need to settle. After the first few minutes of running, the links will seat themselves perfectly into the groove.
Okay.
And you might find the belt goes a tiny bit slack. So you check it, maybe pop one more link out, and then you're probably good for years.
Let's talk about where we should actually use this. The source gives a specific list. Table saws, band saws, drill presses, wood lathes, fans. It seems really skewed toward workshop equipment.
It is, and that goes right back to the vibration sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
These are all machines where smoothness directly correlates to performance. But there's another group the source nods to, the restoration crowd.
Right, original belt size, hard to find.
Yeah, if you're restoring a vintage 1940s drill press, the belt length might be something bizarre, like 43.5 inches. You can't buy that off the shelf at a hardware store anymore.
No way.
The link belt doesn't care about standard lengths. You make it whatever length the machine wants it to be.
It's basically a universal adapter for antique power tools.
That's a great way to put it.
Now, I want to touch on the vendor for a second. The source is Bob Rice from Renewable Energy Consultants. And you noticed something interesting about the rest of their catalog.
I did. It's an eclectic mix. The source mentions gasification, biochar, earth care products. It's not your typical industrial supply house.
It feels a bit disjointed. Like, why is the person selling soil additives also selling high-tech drive belts?
I actually think it fits perfectly if you look at the underlying philosophy.
Yeah.
What links gasification, biochar, and these belts? It's all about efficiency and longevity. Gasification is about extracting the most possible energy from fuel. Biochar is about long-term soil health. And the power twist is about keeping machines running longer with less waste.
So it's an efficiency portfolio.
That's how I read it. It seems like Bob Rice is curating products that solve the problem of our disposable culture. Instead of throwing away a belt every year, you buy one that lasts 10. Instead of depleting your soil, you build it up. It's a coherent worldview, even if the products seem unrelated on the surface.
That's a really generous and interesting way to frame it. It's about not accepting the use it and lose it mentality.
Precisely.
So we've covered the mechanics, the materials, the philosophy, but I have to ask, what are the downsides? We're painting a pretty rosy picture here. Why hasn't this completely replaced rubber everywhere? Why do cars still use serpentine belts?
That's a great question. There are limitations. First, as we mentioned, cost. For an OEM manufacturing 1 million washing machines, saving $5 per belt is a massive deal. They aren't going to use link belts.
Sure.
Second, under extremely high shock loads, A link could technically separate, where a continuous loop might just stretch or slip. And for very, very high-speed applications, like a car engine running at 6,000 RPM, the aerodynamics of the links might generate more noise or wind resistance than a perfectly smooth belt.
So it's not for your Honda Civic?
Definitely not. But for a 1 to 5 horsepower motor running a shop tool or an HVAC fan, it's often a serious upgrade over the OEM part.
Okay, that's a fair balance. So let's wrap this up. What is the main takeaway for the listener who is, right now, staring at a vibrating bandsaw in their garage?
The takeaway is that vibration isn't some mystery you have to just endure. It's a physics problem with a solution. That thump is caused by material memory. And you can solve for that memory by changing the geometry of the belt.
And on the logistics side,
stop building a museum of rotting rubber on your workshop wall. The modular approach, buying width, not length, is just a smarter way to manage your resources.
It really highlights how sticking to the way we've always done it can hold us back. The continuous loop belt was an incredible invention 100 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But deconstructing it into individual links actually makes it better.
It's the paradox of rigidity. We think solid means strong, but sometimes being flexible and segmented, it's actually more resilient.
That's a great final thought. It makes me wonder if we can solve vibration and inventory headaches just by breaking a fixed loop into modular links. What other fixed systems in our lives are we struggling with just because we haven't thought to take them apart?
That's a question worth asking.
Something to chew on while you're checking the tension on your drill press. Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive.
See you next time.